I started just ripping shots left and right. Uh-huh. And I probably went from sober to blacked out in an hour and a half.
Oof.
And with no food in my stomach and encouraged by my frat dad, which is unfortunate, but, you know, that's kind of how it goes. Everyone wants to have a great time that night. Everyone wants to see their frat son get really wasted, and it's a little silly, but...
And we could sit here and be alarmed, but that's normal, right? I mean, that's every frat dad and every frat son, right?
Oh, that's very, very normal.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to the Dr. John Duffy podcast. I am Dr. John Duffy, and I'm already laughing. My guest today is Michael. Michael, welcome, man.
Hey, how you doing, John? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Michael is... I've known Michael for years, and Michael is a guy who is always, always kind of a pleasure to be around. You and I have been together through some not great times in your life, and you've been always great to see, great to talk to, always.
Well, I guess that's just my indomitable spirit, I guess I would call it. But I mean, no, I've always had been very good at interacting with people, and when I walk into a room, I have a good read on how to make people feel better about themselves and brighten up a room is kind of my goal when I walk into a room. So despite going through some hard times, I'm still able to brighten it up a little bit, I think.
Always, man. Always. It's kind of like, it's interesting to start a podcast with you because normally people come in and I've got to like, okay, here's how it's going to go. You don't have to be worried or nervous. You effectively like, yeah, just go ahead. Just go.
What are we waiting for?
So I love that about you. All right, so let's go through some backstory here. Take us back to high school and what high school was like for you. And let's just walk through those years and we'll work our way to the present day and the amazing man you've become here now.
Amazing, yeah.
Amazing.
That's a pretty good way to put it.
I think it's right.
So high school was, I kind of peaked in high school is what I always say. And my grandma and my mom have told me, they come up to me and say, Michael, you didn't peak in high school. You haven't peaked yet. So
they try to tell me
I haven't peaked. They try to tell me I haven't peaked. And I was like, well, no, I kind of peaked in high school. I was, I kind of killed it throughout the whole career, throughout the whole high school years socially. But educationally, I did not put forth the effort. If I went back, I would hit the books way harder.
Right, right. Stay with the social part for a minute. I mean, you really, really thrived socially in high school, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had a good core group of friends. We were all known as the nice guys. We didn't really drink. We didn't party much. We, junior and senior year, got involved in student council and kind of became the leaders of the school almost, which was really cool.
You held a position, right? Were you social chair of the...
That's what I was.
Is that correct?
Co-social chair with my friend Jordan. We were elected by the whole student body, which was really cool. And so I ran kind of any social aspect of Hinsdale Central. I organized and ran. Hosted, kind of.
Right. So lest anybody think that this is like, you know, some little student body and then Michael was one of, you know, was one of 30 options or something. We're talking of a school about 3,000 kids or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere around 3,000.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it was. I don't like to say it was kind of a big deal. I put it on all my resumes. It's something to brag about. And I'm really proud of that aspect. Not many people can say that they led the high school, essentially, in a lot of things. So.
And you seem like the right guy to do it. I mean, you know, even in retrospect, don't you feel like, you know, yeah, I was a good choice for that. I that role suited me well.
Yeah, when I was a freshman, I watched a social chairman, sophomore, watch him, and I was like, that looks like me. I was like, I think I'm going to fill in their shoes coming in senior year. And when I ran, I was pretty sure I was going to be elected. There wasn't any doubt in my mind that we were going to win.
Is that right?
And that I was going to do it, yeah.
Where did that confidence come from?
I'm not quite as confident now. Just youthful exuberance, maybe. Well, I don't know.
That's good. Listen, there's something to be said for it, right? I mean, you know, just going for it, you know, and just assuming like, this is going to work out. This is going to be great.
Yeah, that's like the beauty of being young or younger. I mean, some people would still say I'm young, but younger, you have a wide-eyed look at the world. Everything's new and exciting. And then Yeah, I wanted to win, and so I gave it my all.
I love the exuberance of youth. I heard Springsteen talking. I'm a Springsteen fan.
I know that.
I know you know that. And he at one point said he was singing this one song about growing up, called Growing Up, curiously enough, and effectively says, youth is beautiful because you don't yet know that life has consequences.
Yes, you know? It's true. Yeah, right? Yeah. Nothing really hits you at that age. Right. I mean, I think some people have a hard time in high school. I was lucky enough to have a very easy time of it. I was good at making friends. I high-fived. I had handshakes with all kinds of people in the hallways, and I was good at making friends. And so I think I was really lucky in that aspect. And some people are not quite as lucky. There's a lot of bullying that goes on. There's a lot of isolation. I mean, I was at graduation, my sister's graduation just last week, and it was sad because when everyone's name is called, they say not to cheer, but eventually everyone screams at the top of their lungs who's mm-hmm. there to support their brother or sister who's graduating.
Right.
And and there were a few names where it was just dead silence, and it was just kind of, because you would wait for the telltale scream, the telltale cheer
right.
of every family that was there to support their loved one. And then, yeah, I saw multiple kids after they threw their hats just kind of hustle off, and it was a little sad to see that.
Definitely heartbreaking. Yeah,
so I think I had it lucky.
I think so too. I make a living basically off of teenagers who struggle. You know, like a lot of the work I do is with people who have a really hard time, especially socially in high school.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think that plays a rougher number on self-worth and self-esteem than even struggling academically. Like, I don't know, what was that part of your high school experience like?
Well, I mean, I really didn't think much of it at the time. I mean, I got a lot of pressure from my mom over in high school, and my parents just making sure that I was getting my homework done. And it was the opposite for my little sister. They would have to tell her to stop studying because she's a second semester senior. Mm-hmm. Like, stop studying. It's okay.
You can take it easy now.
You can get a B. It's not the end of the world. They had begged me to get high B's.
that's interesting, right?
I mean, the social aspect of high school is a little, it's really nice to feel like have a lot of friends and whatnot, but I think it's overestimated because the academic aspect is a huge, huge thing in high school. And yeah, kids who are a little more isolated, some of them are some of the smartest people.
Yeah.
And they are huge successes now.
Right.
And so, yeah. Looking back, I wish I had hit the books more.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would have.
All right. So that's interesting, right? So if you were talking to a room full, if you were at an assembly at Hinsdale Central tomorrow, would that be part of your advice to those kids?
Well, yeah, I think so. I didn't come in here realizing that that's the advice I would give. But looking back, yeah. That's the advice I would give.
Yeah. And yet you had this great social confidence. How did that wave carry you into the years that followed? What happened after high school?
Well, I started partying a little bit toward senior year of high school.
Okay.
Started partying a little. And then the first year of college is a shock for everyone. I mean, I got into Indiana, so excited, got into this really esteemed fraternity that my dad was in, my uncles were in, my grandpa was in. So I was really excited for that. And then all of a sudden you're just kind of free to do whatever you want.
It's shocking, isn't
it? Yeah.
Suddenly you have no schedule, no agenda. You don't have to be anywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody's knocking on your door.
Yeah. So pledship was interesting, but I would say the turning point during that first year, we'll take a little darker turn here for a second, but
sure.
The turning point was, it was probably a month into college. I was during pledship, and it was a, you get like a father in the house. So typically a guy is 2 years older than you. And
pledge dad kind of thing.
Pledge dad, yeah. Pledge father, yeah. And so we had done very little eating, almost no drinking of alcohol. And so they didn't even let us eat a meal that night. We got haze a little, blah, blah, blah. But then we got our frat dads, and we were so excited because we knew we got like a night off of pledge. We got to drink and have fun with the frat dad. And I started just ripping shots left and right.
Uh-huh.
And I probably went from sober to blacked out in an hour and a half.
Oof.
And with no food in my stomach and encouraged by my frat dad, which is unfortunate, but, you know, that's kind of how it goes. Everyone wants to have a great time that night. Everyone wants to see their frat son get really wasted, and it's a little silly, but...
And we could sit here and be alarmed, but that's normal, right? I mean, that's every frat dad and every frat son, right?
Oh, that's very, very normal.
Yeah.
And, yeah, maybe it was a lack of food or... I mean, drinking a lot of shots in a row, you feel like you can handle yourself. You're like, oh, man, I don't even feel it. And you drink five more. And then before you know it, it just hits you in one wave.
Because there's a little lag, right?
Yeah. So I was in bed within an hour and a half. I don't remember any of this happening. And one of my pledge brothers and his frat dad found me in the cold dorm. I fell off the top bunk and hit my head on the floor and maybe the bunk next to me as well on the way down. I really don't know.
Right.
And basically got it severely concussed. Luckily, my dad is a Fijian. I think a parent of one of my pledge brothers who is not a Fiji would have gotten the house kicked off of campus. So the house could have gotten in big trouble.
I never really thought about that part. That there could have been consequences beyond you.
There were a few pledge brothers of mine that their parents would have taken the house down.
Got it.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. So
your dad's legacy kind of helped the house a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, and he's still helping now. But
right. But meanwhile, you are severely concussed.
So I woke up. Yeah, I woke up. They moved my mattress to the ground, and I woke up on the ground. It's clueless. And then I looked in the mirror, and my head and face were just bloody messes. Mm. And they should have taken me to the hospital. But so I tried that weekend to study a little bit and try to get some schoolwork done. Yeah. And I just found that I couldn't concentrate at all. And ended up being sent home and dropping three of my classes with a severe concussion. And I think there's a possibility that it still affects me now.
You do?
Yeah, I think there's... Well, I think it set me down on an interesting path, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's hard to blame an event or something, but I think there's some truth to that in that I was... So when I got back, I had one class. It was Psychology 101.
Right.
Easy class. All the PowerPoints were online. That's why I kept the class, so I could keep up with the PowerPoints while I was at home.
Got it.
And
effectively an online class.
Yeah, I killed every test, got like a 96 in the class, but what was I doing for the other... I mean, I had class three times a week.
Right.
And for an hour and a half. So what was I doing the other however many hours there are in the week? So I started smoking weed. And I originally started counting how many days in a row that it was. It was like, oh man, I've smoked 7 days in a row. I was kind of bragging about it. And then it was like, I haven't smoked. The days I didn't smoke were interesting.
No kidding, really?
Oh yeah.
That was the exception all of a sudden.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was always the guy who had weed. I was always the guy, if you wanted to smoke, guys would come to me. Always down to hang out, always down to party, because I had all this free time.
Why do you think you started smoking weed?
I don't know. The first time I did it was graduation night of high school.
Okay.
And then I didn't really touch it that summer much, maybe one other time. And then it was just new, and I liked the feeling, and I had time, and my parents weren't there to admonish me or get me in trouble. I could pretty much, that's why it's dangerous that first year of college.
Yeah.
That's why so many people have trouble that year.
It's interesting that you say that. You know, I have had a lot of guys to interview for this podcast who are in that circumstance where either they're home from that first year, usually the first semester, because something busted out, because they couldn't manage their time, or they wouldn't manage their time. They wouldn't go to class. And oftentimes, weed and or Adderall or Ritalin were part of the equation that kept them out of their game.
And alcohol
almost in every circumstance.
Underlies it, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so the story, take the concussion out of it, is not wildly unusual, but I get that it's like distressing and it puts you behind the eight ball.
Yeah, definitely did. I mean, I was taking one class. And so I remember winter break, I was just, I found out my friends started smoking. So we were just all about it. We constantly smoked, and I was out of the house as much as I could, even though I was home for Christmas, you know, but Yeah, and then second semester rolled around. I had a full course load, but the weed didn't stop.
Oh man!
So right. that'll affect you. Big
oh
time.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine it's hard to go to class.
Oh yeah, I managed to. I think I passed 3 out of 4, which was pretty good.
Yeah,
in that circumstance, honestly.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and yeah, I even at one point, for some reason, I thought that I was going to be happier without my girlfriend, who I'm with now, and it was the dumbest decision that I've ever made in my life, and I broke up with her for a month, and that was a rough month.
What was that about? So, right, you'd been with her since high school, right?
Yeah.
And then you start smoking weed, things start kind of unraveling academically. You know, that almost feels like a self-destructive move, right? I mean, she was a constant in your life.
Oh,
she
man, was, and she's just a huge part of it now. Yeah. She's just the greatest part of my life. And I can't tell you what the real reason was. I think I just wanted to just enjoy college life and... Yeah, I didn't express that well to her, and it was a messy situation for about a month. And then, I mean, I started getting depressed. And so that's when I first started taking some anxiety, depression meds, and drank a lot more. Spring break that year was a nightmare, because I was drunk pretty much the entire 5-6 days.
And was it a nightmare only in retrospect? In real time, did you think, like, this is awesome? Or did you kind of have a hint, like, this is a little darker than
In real time, I thought this was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the underlying layer of... There was one night where I just broke down.
Oh.
And, yeah, a bunch of my pledge brothers had to, like, you know, take me home and put me to bed. But I was talking about Kat and tried to call her and...
Got it. Okay. So yeah. you were aware something wasn't...
Yeah,
right.
And then when I got back, I was like, I need to fix this. I need to get her back. And so I drove without telling my parents to Chicago, which is a 4-hour drive. Met with Kat, talked it over, drove back that night. So that was a long night, but worth every hour.
Uh-huh.
It was the best drive I've ever taken.
I can tell. Yeah. If all these years later, she's still
your life. My parents had no idea I was in town, but I think it was a smart move in the end. Sure, I was committed, and we've been together ever since. I mean, we don't talk about it much, honestly.
You don't?
Almost never.
How long have you and Kat been together?
7 years, a little over.
Let's detour for a second. So, how old a guy are you?
25.
25-year-old guy who's had a girlfriend for 7.5 years, even had a glitch in there where you weren't together.
Yeah.
You know, people... have marriages that don't last that long. Is there wisdom here about, you know, what creates, I mean, even through some very difficult times, how do you maintain a healthy relationship at such a young age? You know, like 7.5 years is impressive.
Yeah.
I know you guys are so tight.
I mean, I firmly believe that, like, she's pretty much just an angel, and she's just huge. She's been supporting me constantly. In my mind, she can do no wrong. So I'm the only one that can do wrong in this relationship. So she's just, but I mean, we really love each other. And that's like the heart of the relationship. And we care about each other, and we genuinely want each other to be happy.
But lest you seem overly self-deprecating, you bring something to the table here. There's a reason she's with you.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I mean, I'm obviously an amazing guy.
You're the guy. Yeah.
I'm great. But yeah, she's... Yeah, I just believe that she's like the greatest person.
Yeah, I know.
Firmly.
That's,
yeah.
That's kind of a beautiful and amazing thing. And I suppose that's part of the key is remembering that you're with somebody who's amazing, right?
Right.
Who is completely supportive of you no matter what, right?
Yeah.
That's something you know about her.
Can't be overstated.
Right.
Really can't.
No.
Yeah. If you find someone like that,
yeah,
you have to.
Did the relationship carry you through? Like, you know, I know we're not out of the darkness yet here. We're still freshman year.
No, we'll go darker.
Hang in there, people.
It's a beautiful day outside, but it's about to get dark in this room.
But do you think Kat's part of what, you know, what made you resilient to it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, yeah, her continued support and love has just been ridiculous. Like, I was, when I sent to the wilderness, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
Her, I mean, just her being there and her letters and knowing that I would have her when I got out, it just kept me going, you know?
Yeah.
If I don't want to ever, it feels like I never went to war, but if a soldier, maybe, like my battle was with myself, but she was always there. She was my lifeline to the world. You know what I mean?
I do.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want to ever say that I'm a soldier or claim that in any way, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
The way you said it is like perfect. This battle was with yourself, right? I mean, and that is so true. And it probably feels like the trauma of, you know, something bigger. And I can imagine you need somebody there who, you know, is just going to be consistently there for you. And, you know, right. Major credit to Kat, because some of these times were pretty dark, right? There was this wilderness experience. How long after that freshman year, was it before you were kind of shipped off to really fix things?
That was, so sophomore year, I continued the weed smoking thing. Summer going into sophomore year, and then sophomore year, first semester, so fall, I was smoking way more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would smoke quite a bit. If anyone knows anything about drugs, like an eighth a day, which is about $60 worth of weed.
So you're effectively high all day, right? I mean, you're
I couldn't eat unless I was stoned, basically.
Got it.
Yeah.
Could you sleep?
Yeah, but I go to bed at 4 a.m., wake up at 11.
Got it.
Never went to class.
Yep.
Barely ever, if not ever.
Yeah, right. So you might not recognize your professors in a lineup at that time.
Oh, huh? Not a chance.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
How did you pull that off? In a frat house. You know, I've asked guys this before. How do you pull it off so nobody ever says to you, "Hey, Michael, what are you doing, man? You know, like you're ruining your life here. You got to go to class. You got to plug in."
The key is you have to. I don't want to give anybody advice here, so so I did it by. You kind of have to wander from floor to floor. So the house is big enough that you could not see somebody for a day,
right?
And that would be normal.
Yep.
So I would, or I could escape to the bed. I could take my, I had my car. I could take my car out and just drive somewhere.
Oh.
I could go to a room and play video games with a friend there, go to a different Pledge Brothers room for a couple hours. So they would, I would say going to class or whatever.
Yep.
And then your class was canceled today or any kind of excuse. It's sad how good I was at it.
You know what? That's exactly how it feels. It feels sad. That's what it's evoking. Like, I picture it in real time. It feels like it's just such a sad process. I can picture it. I can picture how it can work in a frat house, right? Because somebody's sitting around playing video games 24 hours a day, right? You can find somebody who's hanging out and you can hang out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a few friends that were also loving the pot life.
Yeah. Right.
So we kind of fueled each other's flames.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I mean, they're great guys. They're doing great now. But I mean, I think a curse that I have is that I'm able to hide negative emotions really well with a smile and a joke and blah, blah, blah. So I was just talking to my parents about this earlier in last week and about how my older brother, he wears it right out there. So you see it if he's sad or anything like that.
Right.
But for me, I wish I showed it more, because then somebody could tell me, "Hey, what's up? What's wrong?" And maybe I would say, "What's wrong?" You know,
it's a dangerous thing.
Instead, it's dangerous.
Yeah,
yeah. I wouldn't call it a skill. I would call it a curse.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. You can pull off a smile and a laugh, even in this conversation. Right. We're talking about some pretty dark stuff.
Yeah.
And I can tell. I think a moment ago you got a little choked up talking about Kat, and and we could move right past that. You know, like stealthily.
Yeah.
Because you've got this ability, and it probably is more a curse than a blessing, right?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it brightens people up sometimes, so.
Well, I think on the whole, it's the greatest thing about you, man. I mean, seriously, like, I think your attitude and just the joy you bring to a conversation, it's part of the reason I wanted you in this room today, is that, you know, I knew it would be really fun to talk to you, And I think people will benefit from hearing this story, because I think a lot of people feel the same way and are not very expressive. They're more like you than they are like your brother, and it takes you know, something really, really profound experientially to get them emotionally aware, self-aware.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a root of truth to that.
Yeah.
So we'll continue on through the year. So I withdrew from Indiana totally sophomore year and then took a semester at home. And
Classes. Well, that withdrawal, like, not, you know, so that was your dream school. You're this legacy there.
With my best friends.
Yeah.
Still my best friends today.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was jarring. It was like being wrenched out of a dream world.
Yeah, I do.
Back to reality.
Yep.
So, but wrenched out of there by the ones that really love me.
Yeah.
And so
your parents said that they at some point called it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And I, the way you say that, it sounds like appropriately, like it was the right thing to do to call it.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Are you kidding? So yeah, so the sophomore year took a semester off of school. Was doing a lot of therapy sessions and taking some classes at College of DuPage and just trying to get back on my feet before avoiding drugs, alcohol, any of that.
Yeah.
And I really did for the most part. Mm-hmm. I smoked a few times, I think, but they were drug testing me every month.
Right.
Rightly so. And so, yeah, I eventually went back. There was nothing huge that happened in that time, but I went back to school junior year, and that was the time they pulled me out. I went back to Indiana, and then they're like, all right, something more drastic needs to happen here. And so it's very similar to my sophomore year fall, but junior year fall, it was just drinking because they were drug testing me too often. I couldn't get away with smoking. If I could have, I would have.
right. Something for parents to maybe take note of, right, is that, you know, like a drug test, if you're being drug tested and you're inclined to use something, you're going to drink because you know that pot and every other drug is going to show up on that test.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I did a psychedelic a couple times because I knew that just gets out of your system in 2 days. Mm. But other than that, yeah, pretty much nothing.
Yep.
Other than alcohol.
Right.
But I wasn't sitting drinking at home all day. I would just go to any party anytime that I could possibly find one. Any excuse.
Yeah. So that junior year, were you alarmed enough to kind of like feel like, I better right this ship because my parents are getting close. They're going to pull me out of here. This dream will end.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it was going to end.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was clinging on with my every last shred of hope that it would somehow not end.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
As I use the word dream, I'm thinking that might not be the right word. I don't know if it was a dream or a nightmare for you at that point.
it was pretty nightmarish, I would say.
Uh-huh.
But the wilderness, I mean, we can take a turn.
Let's go to the wilderness.
We can head to the brighter skies now, if you guys want. We can climb out of the hole a little bit. Wilderness was awesome, I would say. So I would happily go back, even if just for fun, you know,
right.
Because it was fun for me.
Yeah. Well, if you're up for it, let's and you're willing to stick around, let's do a podcast and talk about the wilderness. You up for that?
Yeah, totally.
All right. So we will be back tomorrow talking about the wilderness.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Michael. You can find this podcast on iTunes, on WGN Plus, on Podbean, and I think a couple other places. I'll let you know. There is a free parenting video series on my website, drjohnduffy.com. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments about this website, or any thoughts about what you'd like to hear us talk about here, follow me on Facebook, Dr. John Duffy, and I will make sure that we address it. Have a great day. And again, I so appreciate your time. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.